the winning sound of Network Sports.
A very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 4417 90. You can send a WhatsApp to 2534679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought in association with the good friends at ESFE, where we run the best show of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Well, whether it was at Yorkshire Grounds on the weekend, in fact on Sunday, there was some talk going around that Johnny Grave was no longer going to be with CWI. And the next day I made a couple of calls, and of course you would have seen the release coming out that Johnny Grave, who would have started back in 2017, is no longer with Cricket West Indies. And that must be an interesting development. Of course, we're going to get some reaction from a panel already gathered. I hope to go around the Caribbean to get a reaction from one or two noted journalists as well. And we're also hoping to get Johnny Grave, who actually promised to be with us on the line, of course, this evening. We're just trying to make that contact with Johnny Grave. So can we go and speak to Johnny? Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, already we've got Johnny Grave, the outgoing CEO of Cricket West Indies. Hello, Johnny. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Andrew.
Right. Okay. The news came as a shock to me that you're leaving. Why are you leaving, Johnny?
Well, as you know, my contract was renewed last year for a year to coincide with delivering of the Men's T20 World Cup. I've been in the role for 7.5 years now, and the T20 World Cup's obviously been delivered, and yeah, it sort of gives me an opportunity to reflect, the board the opportunity to reflect, and we've agreed that you know, we'll use the next few months to do a handover and transition from me as CEO to a new candidate. So it's obviously been a hugely challenging but very enjoyable role, and yeah, one that I've taken enormous sort of, you know, been a huge honour to serve West Indies cricket, and yeah, hopefully I leave in a better place than I joined, and yeah, wish everyone involved all the success in the future.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a new job lined up, Johnny?
No, not yet. I wouldn't mind a bit of a break after what's been a pretty full-on, all-encompassing role, and then yeah, hopefully move into a new position some point in the new year.
Well, of course, we've got journalist fellow Wallace chomping at the bit. We've also got Kaiso is with us from South Africa, Basil Butcher, and of course, Dr. Ford. Was there any aggro, though? I mean, you've been here since, what, 2017? Was it a friendly discussion with the board that it's about time to move on?
Yeah, I've been talking to the president about it for a while. You know, the kids have had an amazing experience in Antigua. They've grown up here. They've spent all of their primary school years here, and they're now transitioning into secondary school, so it's the right time within the next 12 months for them to have moved on. And yeah, just at the end of the World Cup, and starting a new strategic plan with you know, with money in the bank, it's a good time now for someone else to come in and not be under any immediate pressure financially, at least, and can yeah, deliver that new plan with, you know, what's now an experienced and very competent senior management team and staff at Cricket West Indies to hopefully continue the, you know, the much needed work that has to happen for us to continue to try and move forward.
Okay, well, of course, we've got Dr. Ford, your good friend, is with us, Philo Wallace, and of course, George Ferris has joined us as well in and of course our good friend Basil Butcher. Let's go to you, Dr. Ford. Your good friend Johnny Grave is leaving us. Were you shocked when you heard it, Doc?
Good night, Andrew and our panelists and listeners. Well, I knew Johnny wasn't a permanent CEO. I mean, every job has its tenure, and you know, change is inevitable. I guess the real question for Johnny, you say that you're leaving the organization with some money in the bank, but considering your utterances regarding the way the revenue sharing is in world cricket right now, do you really think that, you know, we're in that healthy a position? If you were to compare all of the cricketing nations outside of Zimbabwe and Bangladesh, where would you say we are in terms of our financial position?
I'd probably say that based on the media rights deal that we've done, you know, there were, when I joined, we were all part of a Sony 10 Sports media deal where they did our production from India. They owned all of our rights, TV, radio, digital rights across all markets in the world. And everyone was in that deal outside of the big three, India, Australia and England. And I think coming out of that, we are ahead of all the other boards outside of obviously the domestic market, particularly in South Africa, where they obviously have huge support from SuperSport, their almost monopoly satellite TV company. But we've done well in the TV deals that we've done. You know, the new ICC revenue sharing model, where it's still, you know, my views on that, it still sees more money coming to Cricket West Indies over the next 4 years. But clearly there's a bit of uncertainty, particularly in the Indian market, from 2027 onwards from ICC revenues perspective. And, you know, I don't think in modern professional sport you can ever relax and think that you've got enough money. We need more money for all levels of our cricket. You know, I think particularly the grassroots side needs much more attention in terms of getting new funding in to support particularly schools programs and club cricket. So you can never have enough financing, but clearly what we've been able to do over the last few years is restructure the business, budget on a four-year cycle, so we know exactly how much money we needed by the end of this financial year, September 30th, 2024, to get through what will be, outside of the England tour that's coming here in November, going to be two very difficult years before we hope again that, you know, India come in 2027 and we can secure a new media rights deal in that market.
I'll make it easy for you, Johnny. I'll make it easy for you, because I know that you have a lot of information and detail, but do we have enough money if we don't get any more money to make it to 2027?
Well, no, we need to continue to, you know, get money in. But look, we'll probably have an accumulated
surplus. Okay, so how much money do you think we have? Considering what we have now, how far can that take Cricket West Indies on a, you know, financial annual basis? How much are we covered? You know, with every business, you say you should have X amount of months or years of cover. How many months or years of cover do we have if we look forward from the 13th of August, 2024?
We know that we've got enough money in the bank to continue to maintain and invest in the cricket system over the next 2 years. So we know that we're not going to get as much revenue in 25 and 26, and we won't need to go to external borrowing if that money is invested and spent wisely with the controls that we put in place, and won't allow us to have any cash flow challenges. We'll have enough money to, you know, do the new things that we've spoken about, pay parity for the women's team, under-23s programs throughout the region, you know, continue to invest a bit more in the men's and women's academies, as well as, you know, A-team tours and development tours outside of the men's and women's international programs. So that's what we've got in the plan and in the money in the bank to get us through those two financial years, yeah.
Okay, so tell me about, we know what we have, we know our limitations. In what way does Cricket West Indies intend to pivot based on the guidance you've given to increase revenue in within those 2 years. I mean, something new, something different, something innovative. Are there any things on the horizon as you depart that you can think of that you say, okay, I've left them with this, so I feel really good, something new?
Well, the new thing that we've been looking to do for a while now is launch a West Indies Foundation that would help bring more money into the grassroots elements of the game as an official charity separately run with a remit to fund grassroots and development cricket within the region. That's something that I think is crucially important, and once established, hopefully can attract new sources of revenue into there. We've obviously made some progress. We've seen huge investment by the governments in the T20 World Cup into infrastructure. But we need to continue that, not just for the World Cup, but ongoing, particularly in our pitches and practice facilities that are still significantly behind where we would need to be when we benchmark ourselves across the world. And we recognise that we've doubled the capacity of the amount of cricket we're playing with women's cricket needing to make big strides forward. So look, the work is never going to end. You're never going to have enough money. But in terms of needing to go to banks to borrow, in terms of being in cash flow or financial crisis, I don't anticipate West Indies being in that position between now and 2027 if they continue to make good cricketing decisions and good financial decisions.
I see. All right. Let's go to Kaiso, who's with us. Of course, he's from Zimbabwe. Kaiso, of course, Zimbabwe actually playing. South Africa actually playing against the West Indies. I was distracted by a very interesting WhatsApp message coming in, which I'll read shortly. Were you surprised in South Africa when you got the news that Johnny Griffiths is leaving?
Good evening to you gentlemen, and good morning from the side. Look, we are quite accustomed to what you'd call governmental instability, but having listened to what Mr. Grave has said, clearly he has been quite the beacon of stability. And as Dr. Ford rightly says, that no tenure is permanent. And I think sometimes you live long enough to become a villain. If you stay in a position too long, it kind of reminds me of the period that we experienced with Dr. Gerald Majola. Who was a CEO, I think, who at some point slightly overstayed his welcome. And by the time then his tenure came to an end in rather acrimonious circumstances, after a commission of inquiry, it then just became a bit too messy. And you'd find that now CSA, Cricket South Africa in particular, we've struggled to see the CEOs of the particular organization seeing out their terms. I mean, so far, like CSA, are quite holding the fort now. Politi Musengi has been in the senior position for a while now, but there were two other CEOs who were unable, Thabang Moro and Harun Logart, who were unable to finish their terms for varying reasons. So the fact that Johnny Grave in particular is stepping away after completing his term, firstly, shows that one, there's been continuity and stability within Cricket West Indies. I won't be able to provide a full appraisal of how his term has been, based on the fact that also I'm being based in South Africa. I wouldn't be too clued up in terms of what would be the inter-island nitty-gritties that actually make and break West Indies cricket. So the fact that he's seen off his term, something that we haven't experienced here in a very long time. I think, firstly, that's a very, very big fillip. That means at least there is a standing and stable structure that will be taken over by the next CEO.
Right. Basil, let's go to you. Any questions for Johnny?
I'm not really any questions per se. I just want to, I've had interactions with Johnny over the years. I found Johnny to be very open, which was very refreshing. Even in times, he would respond to questions, queries in your chat and other chats. And I think that looking at his tenure, he came into the West Indies cricket at a very turbulent, if you will, period there. and had to play a steadying hand, and now to leave on this outgoing with us having quote unquote money in the bank, which is something that has not been part and parcel of our cricket for a while. I have to commend him on doing that. I commend him for him being very frank about the current structure of world cricket in terms of revenue sharing and so on and so forth. I thought that was really good on his part, because that's something many people in these smaller countries, so to speak, have been complaining about. And actually to hear it from the CEO of the West East Cricket Board was very refreshing indeed. You know, so I would like to again commend Johnny and to wish him and his family all the best in the future. The one thing I would ask Johnny is more from a regional perspective. How do you see going forward our regional cricket system, particularly at the first class, the senior level, both men and women? How healthy do you see that situation? Are you satisfied with what is put in place since you came and now that you're leaving?
Yeah, look, I think, firstly, thank you for the support you've given me, Basil, and the feedback you've given me very honestly at times over the 7 years. I appreciate it, and your best wishes. But, look, I think our first-class system now is stronger on the basis of having the academy in it. I think over time, if the CCC team can invest in and provide a sort of a second pathway for our best young players to become professional cricketers and you know, maybe have that backstop of being able to also continue with their higher education studies, it bodes well. I think my biggest frustrations with the championship is that it costs over $5 million a year for us to put it on, and I can't see that changing. I can't see regional travel costs or schedules improving in the short or medium term. So I think the reality is that first class system is a big investment, and the one thing that we need to get more from it is we need to get our players playing on better pitches, and I think that's still something that is a huge challenge for the organisation and for the stakeholders to get right, because I firmly believe that if we want to improve particularly West Indies batting, which I think everyone would agree that I think the stat is that we haven't produced a cricketer that's averaged over 40 in Test match cricket since Desi Haynes, and Desi would have been playing his cricket back in, you know, the 60s, well over, you know, almost 60 years ago. So we've got to improve the pitches, we've got to improve our batsmanship. And but I think in terms of the West Indies Championship, you know, when you think about the schedules and that you want to play and our players need to play in foreign conditions more often with the Red Bull, so in the subcontinent, on, you know, faster wickets in South Africa and seeming swinging tracks in the UK. I think when you put all of that together, playing Red Bull cricket from January to April is probably about right in the region. But then making sure that from that Easter period through to December, that the best players on the academy and in that fringe setup of the A team are getting as many opportunities to continue to play long form cricket, because it's only by playing more that they're going to get better.
Philo, good evening to you, sir. Any questions for your good friend, Johnny?
All right, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to the panel. Good evening to Sherilyn Hart, Carlos, and Evan. Johnny, I would just like to wish you all the very best in your future endeavors. 7 years at the head of Cricket West Indies would have bring joy, maybe a bit of headaches, but obviously it brought pleasure. You made lots of friends. I dealt with you on a number of occasions, and I really enjoyed the interaction and your advice and your frank comments about West Indies cricket and certain issues of West Indies cricket and world cricket. I commend your stance as well in relation to revenue sharing and where West Indies should be and what should be happening for us. And all I can wish you and your family is all the very best. I want to ask you, Johnny, have you left West Indies, or are you leaving West Indies in good standing that when you read that, you can go to wherever you want to go and say, look, I have done my very best. Mm-hmm. I have weathered the storm and I've put certain things in place and parameters in place that if they follow the guidelines that I've left, they can be some success. You said we have 2 years of a little gray area. You said we can manage it. If we do it properly, we can get through it. Do you think that you have left our organization where you can say, look, it will be done?
I think so. Look, I share many of the frustrations that you and fans have with West Indies cricket as a whole. But I think someone reminded me today that when I joined, I think most of the international players that had lifted the trophy in 2016 didn't want to play for the West Indies. And in fact, those that did couldn't, because we were playing Pakistan and England at home during the IPL window, and we were going to England for a tour during the CPL. So it became impossible for them to really represent West Indies cricket without sacrificing huge sums of money. The same person reminded me that the likes of Darren Bravo and Nicholas Pooran even were banned by West Indies cricket when I joined. And my mandate when I joined was very much to repair the player relationships with Jimmy Adams. And I think to a certain extent we did that with the players that then became available. You know, maybe not to the extent that I would have liked in terms of being available for all three formats, but certainly the white ball format. I think we've improved our reputation internationally. And, you know, as I said earlier, the balance sheet is a very different picture now to the one that I inherited. And obviously we had to weather the storm for COVID. But I agree with some of the other comments made that CEOs can outstay their welcome. And I think it's been an amazing experience and one that I've loved. It's been challenging and frustrating, as you would imagine and appreciate. But it's also been an amazing opportunity. And I am a cricket fan. I'm a West Indies cricket fan, and I will continue to be so long after I've left. So I just hope that the things that I haven't been able to achieve, particularly improving pitches, particularly professionalising the game at territorial board level, doing more to assist the board in understanding why they need to embrace governance reform and change, and that cricket is now a multi-million dollar business and you need business people running the affairs off the field, and you need the cricketers and former cricketers making decisions on the field. I probably have not done all I wanted to do in those areas, as well as the grassroots funding that I spoke to earlier, but I think the reality is, particularly with that 2 years of COVID that really did, in some respects, set us back and in some respects gave us the opportunity to reset, that would probably be the things that I'm, professionally disappointed that we haven't been able to make more progress in. But at the end of the day, I still feel that, the strategic plan that West Indies have got and the opportunity they have on the back of the World Cup to continue to professionalise and really focus on that next level down, the territorial boards, and helping them to invest more in their cricket systems and define their plans and engage stakeholders at all levels to get on board and help them. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the challenge for the next strategic plan.
Mm-hmm. George, any questions for your good friend, Johnny?
Hey, good evening to the panelists. Good evening to all of your listeners. Andrew, Johnny, thank you so much for your service to West Indies cricket. I appreciate your openness. You've been always accessible. You've been transparent, and I thank you for that. We don't see much of that in West Indies cricket. One question I'm going to ask, you may need the whole night for this, but just give me a summary. What do you see as the biggest opportunities and challenges for West Indies cricket in the coming years?
Wow, that is a good question. I think the challenges are at global level. I think Test cricket is under threat. I think that anyone in West Indies cricket who thinks that the likes of England and India are just going to continue to come to the Caribbean whenever we need them and want them, I don't think anyone should be under any illusions of quite how difficult it is to negotiate with those boards and attract them to come to the West Indies to play their cricket when their demands on the calendar are so high and the money that they can make by going to other territories and then getting the reciprocal tours back into their home territories. Money talks, and coming to the West Indies and West Indies touring unfortunately, is not as lucrative for those boards as an England tour and an India tour because of their TV markets and deals. So, you know, the work that particularly coming out of the Future Tours program in 2019 that the former presidents Gerrit and I had to do to get India and get England to come here, you know, I don't think anyone should underestimate that. But I would say that, you know, we're still everyone's second favourite team and this huge amount of love for West Indies cricket. But, you know, talk is cheap and we want to see the action. So I think I'm hopeful that in the next few weeks before I sign off that I can get, at least in writing, some future tours from both England and India, which will help with mitigating some of those risks. But there is some headwinds coming, particularly in the Indian market, with the TV changes that are happening there that will kick in at world level from 2027 onwards. But again, there are huge opportunities. The American market that we've, you know, taken a leadership position on, not just with the co-hosting of this T20 World Cup, but becoming an Olympic sport, I think is an opportunity again for our local boards to engage their Olympic associations and governments. And, you know, I'd be hopeful that West Indies cricket can get cricket into the Pan Am Games, and the winners of the Pan Am Games in Peru in 2027 would automatically go through and take part in LA 28. I think that's a huge opportunity for our men's and women's cricket if we get it right. And I think the American market and almost growing the sport in this time zone is crucially important, because we've seen in the World Cup, we've seen in the CPL, that when you can put cricket on at night, when fans can and kids who aren't at school and after work can come, they will come and support the cricket and they love the cricket. We've got to make it more accessible and we've got to market and promote it and not assume that anyone that's born in the West Indies will just be a cricket fan because of the legacy and the amazing history. We've got to work hard to ensure that that is protected and maintained. But yeah, I'm confident that cricket is growing. It's the second biggest sport in the world. And I'm sure with the management team that are in place, the staff and all the stakeholders being more aligned, you know, the future is bright. And what everyone wants to see is that translated into results on the field and more consistency, not just for our men's team, but our women's team. And hopefully there are better days ahead. But that investment in the academies, the investment into those territorial board local cricket systems and the general professionalisation of the sport at all levels is still, for me, you know, where West Indies cricket has to go. It's got no other choice.
All right, Johnny, we're not going to keep you too much longer.
Hey,
We're not going to keep you too much longer. Let's pause for business, because when we come back, we're going to get a reaction from across the Caribbean. And we'll certainly continue our discussion with Johnny. And of course, we're going to turn our attention to the test match that was played recently, West Indies versus South Africa. And look forward, of course, to the second test, which starts on Thursday. Mason and Guest, brought in association with the good friends at ASFE, where we're on the best show of the day.
ASFE, white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, let's go straight to Jamaica and talk to noted journalist Jerome Foster. Jerome, when you got the news that Johnny Grave was no longer going to be with us, were you surprised? And I'm sure you got a question or two for Johnny. Jerome? Is Jerome still? He's not there? Okay, he's not there. All right. Yeah. Okay, so we have Jerome now? No?
You hearing me? You hearing me, Andrew?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a shocker to me because on the back of what we probably could say was a successful T20 World Cup, it came almost like out of the blue. A couple of questions came to us yesterday in our newsroom and department from callers in terms of why is he going now, because he tends to be a little bit more transparent than what we have been used to in West Indies cricket over the years in terms of being available, being able to give you answers to tough situations. It might not be the answers that we're looking for or what we want to hear, but at least he has been always been present in the media and he's been readily available to the media. Well, for me, whenever I've called on him to have situations ironed out, he has always been in front of the firing line. He hasn't really shied away from giving his perspective or giving the perspective of the board, as I said, regardless of the situation. Whether it is controversial, whether it is media-friendly, it hasn't been an issue for him. So it was a little bit of a shocker, but knowing Johnny and the professional that he is and how he tried to shape the board to be a little bit more professional and the sport around the region, you don't expect anything less from him going forward in his future endeavors. Just one question from me, Johnny, in terms of the territorial board, because it's almost like a low-hanging fruit over West Indies cricket in terms of their importance and their powers. How much do you think needs to be changed to get a one-directional view for the development and growth of the game in the region?
Yeah, look, it's not an easy question. I think the territorial boards need to be the focus of the next strategic plan. It's all about providing them with more assistance, direction, best practice, and ultimately funding. You know, one of the things that you'll see in the financial accounts when they're published post-audit at the AGM next year is that we paid most of the debt that we'd accrued during COVID and before to the territorial boards we've cleared. So, you know, they've been all receiving money that they've been waiting for a very, very long time. And I hope that they use that money extremely wisely, that they use it to plan and document what they're trying to do, because I think that by having a strategic plan, having a cricket development plan that goes from schools and grassroots all the way up to the men's and women's senior team, you know, that by having that and then engaging stakeholders, because we can't just allow, and this is the same in all cricket systems around the world, you know, and I know this firsthand from being in the county cricket system for 17 years, you can't just expect the England Wales Cricket Board in our world, Cricket West Indies, to fund everything all the time. And you need locally to be energetic and be creative in terms of how you engage fans, how you engage corporate Caribbean and the governments to continue to bring money into cricket and for cricket opportunities to be provided to cricketers. So that's the biggest challenge that I think that we face. But I do feel that the board understand that, and that the territorial boards know that that cricket in many aspects would be in decline in their home territories, and that they need money, support and expertise to help them get to where they need to get, which is cricket thriving at all levels.
Yeah. Just one more question, Andrew. In the last couple of months, it's almost as if you've been like a lone wolf in the dark regarding the state of affairs with Test cricket and the smaller boards and territories in terms of the viability of Test cricket and the longevity of it, or how is it that countries like the West Indies are going to survive? Mm-hmm. I know you have gotten this question on numerous amount of occasions, but on your way out, do you see a positive light for the West Indies in terms of surviving with the current model that it is with Test cricket?
Look, I'm a massive traditionalist and Test cricket fan. I love T20 cricket, but I also think that Test cricket is, you know, the one where you create a legacy in history, and it's you know, as a fan, it's what I remember. I couldn't tell you really anything that's happened in the 100 or even last year's CPL or this year's IPL, but I could tell you, you know, what's happened and who's been performing in Test cricket around the world. But I think Test cricket needs to be cherished. I think we need a league mentality amongst the top, you know, 8 or 9 teams in the world, in particular. We need to share revenue. We need to make sure that everyone has decent first-class systems and 18 cricket programs in place, because otherwise, you know, you're going to get one-sided Test cricket, which I don't think is, you know, an exciting or interesting product. I think we need competitive balance among the Test teams, and that's only going to take with, in my opinion, radical reform. But I think it's possible, and I hope and pray that it happens. But I'm, you know, I think luckily that India have huge influence over world cricket, as everyone knows, and Indians passion for Test cricket and love for Test cricket is still there. So I'm optimistic that with the strength of Test cricket in Australia and England and the Ashes and the way India feel about Test cricket, that there is a future because they know that they just can't play themselves. So hopefully one of the things I'll be able to do in the next few weeks is that I've been working on for several months with other members of the team is expanding our Australia tour next summer to have three Test matches and also our tour to New Zealand to go from two Test matches to three because, I do feel for the Test players when they have that result, the Gabba, and then have to wait 6 months to play Test cricket again. So we do need to be playing more Test cricket. We do need to be playing and continue to play more A-team cricket. And hopefully that, along with the West Indies Championship, will give our red ball cricketers, enough exposure in order to execute their skills and win games of cricket more consistently.
Mm-hmm. Well, Johnny, just before you go, anyone else leaving with you from your staff or just you?
Not that I'm aware of, but, it's West Indies cricket, so you never know. But no, I'm hoping that...
What do you mean by that, again, though, Johnny? What do you mean by that?
I would never bet on anything in West Indies cricket. As I sit here now, I can honestly tell you, I hope that there's going to be stability, because I think one of the things that has happened over the last few years is stability and leadership is important. Making chopping and changing doesn't help anyone. So
no.
I hope that the next CEO is, is given the opportunity to lead for a reasonable period of time, and that they'll know, and I will assure them that I will always be available if they ever need any help or advice. But hopefully, they find a good or even better candidate, and they can continue or move cricket forward even quicker. But they'll certainly have my full support whoever gets the job, because it's not the easiest job in the world, but it's a huge privilege and a massive responsibility to be CEO of Cricket West Indies. And hopefully the board will find a brilliant candidate to do everything that I haven't done and more.
Talking about leadership, though, did you have a good relationship with Dave Cameron, Ricky Skerritt, and Dr. Shallow?
Well, Dave Cameron was the president that first spoke to me about coming to the West Indies and, gave me the opportunity to become CEO.
Mm-hmm.
I think working with Ricky Skerritt, particularly during COVID and reforming the finances, was, one of the most enjoyable periods for me, even though it was probably the most challenging. He gave me enormous support in the role. And, obviously, Kishore joined the board in 2017 as a director when I joined as CEO. So I don't think I've got a bad relationship with anyone. I'm sure there are lots of fans that are celebrating my departure. But as Philo said, I've made lots of friends for life since I've been in this role. And, I'm a passionate West Indies cricket supporter and will remain so. But I'm certainly not perfect. And at the same time, I look back very fondly, as I say, particularly with all the changes and challenges that I had with Ricky Skerritt, because we had a minus 23 million balance sheet. And every single month for probably 15 months, I had no idea whether we'd be able to pay our staff and players. So I don't miss those days, I must admit.
Did you want to continue, Johnny, in the job?
No, I felt that it was getting towards the end. And as someone said earlier, I didn't want to outstay my welcome. I'd had a very sensible conversation with Kishore about wanting to transition sensibly and professionally, though, because I didn't want to leave West Indies cricket in the lurch. And ideally, I wanted to hand over to someone to give them every opportunity to be successful in the role. So I was happy to transition at whatever timetable the board wanted. I would have potentially stayed a bit longer until they'd found a candidate. But I think the reality was that the board were happy for me to hand over to an interim CEO, whoever that is, whenever they appoint that. And I've got between now and October to do as much as I can to tidy up those things that I spoke about, some TV deals, both in the Caribbean and a couple in other markets around the world, and make sure that I lock down some England and India tours and hand over the baton to whoever in the best possible shape. But as I said earlier, I'll always be around to anyone that wants any advice. I'll never be shy in giving it, and whether people listen or want it is up to them. But I'll do everything I can to help West Indies cricket for as long as I can.
So your final day in the job is what, October the 31st? Is that the final day?
October the 31st, yeah, end of October.
Mm-hmm. Tell me something, what's the quick status on Roland Hold? Is he still with the board?
Yeah, Roland worked on the T20 World Cup, leading the cricket operations of that tournament. And then I think he had a short break while I was in the UK and on to Sri Lanka for various ICC meetings. And then I went on vacation at the same time as our friends from South Africa arrived on our shore. So he's busy looking after the South Africa Test Series and T20s. And then, I've not seen him for probably the longest period, actually. Seen him for 6 weeks. Teams calls and on WhatsApp calls.
I'm hearing he's leaving at the end of September. Can you confirm that?
No, I can't confirm that.
Mm. You can't confirm that. You haven't heard anything?
No.
Mm, okay. All right. But Basil has got
Drew.
Has got a question for you. Yes, Basil.
One more question for Johnny. Had the board renewed your contract, would you have stayed on?
Well, to some extent, they have renewed my contract because it was ending on the 30th of September. So whether they'll bother with a full long-term contract for 4 weeks, I'm not sure. Maybe we'll just old school do that via a letter or a shake of hands. But I wasn't looking. I was looking if I'm being completely honest, I was looking for a maximum of a year extension and that transition that I spoke about. And the timing of that would have been based around how quickly they could start recruitment for my replacement and how quickly they could find someone. And once they found someone, their notice period, and obviously their ability to start, and whether they wanted a 1 day, 1 week, 1 month handover, I would have done it. As I said, the board are happy for me to depart and hand over to an interim CEO. So, we agreed that I can tidy up the affairs over the next 3 months and hopefully have a bit of a break and then move on to the next opportunity.
Mm. So you're confirming that bit? I'm just wondering.
Johnny, I'd just like to say that you've been really professional, dignified, articulate, and you've been positive about a brand that's been waning, and I respect you for it. You've always been able to answer questions, even difficult questions, well. And I think in the last few words that you have mentioned, you have outlined one of the deficiencies of West Indies cricket, which is about planning and, you know, trying to look towards the future. Because to be honest, even though it's not my area, I think that it is insufficient for you to be leaving and your replacement isn't there and the handover isn't being done in a timely manner. It's going to take a big learning curve for any CEO. I do have my fears and reservations about who your successor will be and how knowledgeable and how well they will do the job. But that's not your concern. I just want you to know that, you know, we appreciate that you've come on the show and done your part. And, you know, I have had the opportunity to meet you and some of the kids as well. And I want to wish you all the best.
Thank you, Dr. Ford. It's always been a pleasure coming on the show and having some robust conversations. And who knows? Maybe Andrew will invite me back in a year's time.
Yeah, indeed.
I could be way more honest then.
Just before you go, just want to get something. So you're saying ideally you wanted to stay on for another year. Is that what you're saying? I think I heard that.
No. I said that the maximum I would have stayed or considered staying would have been another year. And that's based around my family situation and my children.
Okay.
Their secondary schooling. But I think I'd come to the conclusion that I was certainly running out of energy to do the job to the same level of I'd done it when I first joined. As I've said three times in this call, you don't want to outstay your welcome.
No.
And you want to leave the organisation, you know, when they're set up for success, which I feel financially they are, and that we've got some stability across. If you look at all of our teams and the head coaches, you know, I hope that the board will give them time and some stability and support. And in that respect, with the new director of cricket and the management team we have, it's not about one individual. We've got an experienced senior management team who can run the organisation. And I'm very confident that they, if given the support, can deliver what we all want them to, which is improvements across across the system.
Final question, Johnny. What advice do you have for CWI? You're leaving, in fact, you leave at a time when the Guyana Cricket Board and CWI locked in a court battle, which I think is most unfortunate. On the Mason and Guest show, it's headed into 7 o'clock. Final question, Johnny, what advice do you have for CWI as you leave?
That's a good question, Andrew. Look, I would say that when we've been successful on the field is when we've prepared the best and planned the best and then executed those plans. And I feel it's exactly the same off the field. I think we need to plan and prepare and then execute. And I think we've got a good plan. We need our territorial boards to have documented, published strategic plans and cricket development plans that people can see, comment on, you know, debate and engage with. And, you know, the holy grail for West Indies cricket, in my opinion, is still what most other modern international cricket boards have done to be prepared to be agile enough to cope with all of the changes that have happened and will continue to happen in professional cricket, which is governance reform. And we need more skills-based independent board. And I've always maintained that since I first joined. And I think until we get that, West Indies cricket will always be of a knife edge on you know, the politics versus the business. And and make no mistake, we're in a very competitive business off the field as well as on the field. So we need to be as prepared and as planned and as well resourced with the best people across the region, not just within the staff and management, but also on the board, to be equipped for all the challenges that that will come our way.
I see Basil, you had your hand up. Just final question, was it, Basil?
Yeah. I just want to hear what is Johnny's views on this new selection policy that we've been hearing about, if you care to give your opinion on it.
Controversial. You agree with it, Johnny? You like it? you like that selection policy, Johnny?
Well, what I think is, as I've argued with you many times, Andrew, 11 cricketers can only take the field, and selection is always going to have, particularly in the West Indies, because of the passion of the sovereign nations coming together rather than counties and states and territories. You know, it's always going to have a big focal point within our cricket system. But Cricket West Indies has to make choices over how it allocates its resources. And you know, four or five selectors travelling around the region, staying in expensive hotels, paying meal allowance, getting on business class flight. Now, I would argue that's probably not the best way to spend $500,000 a year, and that actually empowering the head coaches, particularly now in modern cricket where players want to know with certainty from one individual whether they're in or out or what their weaknesses are or how they need to train or what they need to do to improve or their role within a team. You get that clarity from a head coach. And I'll never forget a conversation I had very early in my cricket career where I was invited to an event in Manchester, and Sir Alex Ferguson was told about the cricket selection system. And he just couldn't believe that, you know, a head coach or a manager would allow a group of individuals to pick their squad or team for them. So it's I think it's an outdated approach, but I do think that selection is a cricket West Indies ticklish subject, and a complicated one that will always divide opinions. But I think empowering the head coaches, but also ensuring that you've got a scouting network of independent thinkers, is critical for success. And you know, I hope that with a style of play that we can adopt across the region, and therefore clarity over what type of cricketers we're looking for. And with access to the modern data, but also experienced cricket people who understand the game, I think we can still pick the best teams available. But again, you know, that will involve the right people getting those in that scouting network, and them being confident enough to be independent in their thinking. And but I'm sure that election will still be a hot topic on Mason and Guest for many years to come.
Yeah, indeed. Well, John, I want to thank you. I think your interaction with the media is a matter of fact. I'll tell you, I've been in this business for a long time. You've never shied away. And I really want to wish you all the success in your new endeavors. You've been with West Indies Cricket for the last 7 years or so, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts, and we wish you well going forward.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and thank you to everyone on the panel tonight for their kind words, and also know that I will be handing over to people, explaining them that, you know, being open and transparent is the way forward, and being honest in all your communication is the way forward, and taking the criticism on the chin is the only way to deal with it, and that, as you and I both know, Andrew, that we need to ensure that cricket is accessible to people around the region, and radio is still a massively important channel for cricket to be discussed and debated. And as long as cricket is being discussed, cussed and debated, then it means people still care. And if people still care, then West Indies cricket's still got a great future. So thank you very much, and I look forward to you buying me a farewell drink, Andrew.
Indeed, I'll do that. I'll see you in Guyana. I'm going to Guyana tomorrow. Hope you're there as well. Johnny, are you going to Guyana?
I'm not going to Ghana, so I'll have to get, you'll have to owe me that, honour that beer in the future.
Indeed. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We really welcome. You've been on the show for several years now, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Andrew.
Right. Okay. Let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to certainly be looking at the game that was played recently, the Test match, and of course, we want to look forward as well. Will there be any changes? Would you make any changes to the West Indies? And I'll certainly make one or two. And we're going to open the lines very soon. Mason and Guest, brought in association with our good friends at ASF Work Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASF White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ASF is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da. What you want, ESA is the best shot of the day, is the best shot of the day.
All right, time to talk cricket in terms of the Test match, bat and ball, as they say. We're going to go to Jerome Foster. I know he's a very, very busy man. No big achievements for the Jamaicans this time in terms of track and field, which is a major disappointment. My final question to you, Jerome, would you make any changes for the second Test match?
I'll probably manage the workload of Jayden Steele, given that he has played what, 4 test matches in about 6 weeks, and he had a long-standing back injury, and then he had a knee issue. So, given that he has played a lot of cricket from May onwards into the English series, I'll probably look at just giving him a rest. Just for his physical condition, not anything to do with his performance, because obviously he has been our best fast bowler over these 4 matches. Shamar Joseph, I think, should come in. And I just believe that the pace bowling attack needs a little bit more pace on these surfaces that are relatively slow and low. And if you have someone bowling to hit the stumps regularly at a high pace, then you're more likely to cause problems than just the bowlers who are bowling that line and length to just keep things steady on slow surfaces.
So you're going to have Roach and Holden the same side, Jerome?
I think Holder is a sure pick based on how he's been played. He's been played as a number 6.
A sure pick? What do you mean by that?
Based on the selection.
Is Holder getting wickets?
No, but he's batting he's playing as your...
As a what?
He's playing as your all-rounder.
Yeah, but so I question the word sure pick.
All right, probably
I'll pick him. Yeah, but he's not.
He's one of the main...
Sure is a big word, you know. The word sure is a big word. Big. You should know that.
I probably should have used the word sure, but he's one of the main figures in that top 6 batting. So right. I don't think they're going to change him there. But I get where you're coming from with the Roach and Holder system in terms of the pace.
Yeah.
You probably want a little bit more pace on the ball on these surfaces. Yeah. That's just my...
You know, there's my view that we need to move on from Roach. I think so. And I'll tell you why.
I personally think this is his last Caribbean.
But where's Roach automatically getting back in the West Indies side? Are we playing Roach based on experience? Look at Roach's last, 15, 20 test matches. How could you have a Shamar Joseph who 3 or 4 test matches ago, he was undercooked in England, and you take him to Trinidad and you put him down and you have Roach and Holder bowling together? Come on.
Yeah.
What's that all about? Yeah. What is that all about?
A bit strange, because I just think that Joseph needed more test matches under his belt get into it. And I think the Trinidad game should have been another run for him. And probably Rhodes should have come in the second test, given that he was off the ball for a bit and was injured. So that was a little bit strange.
Would you play Rhodes in back-to-back test matches? That's a question for you.
Oh, that's a tough one.
That's why you're a missing guest, sir.
That's a tough one. Yeah, but I think based on the lines of him being the spearhead of the attack, then I think that's the reason he's going to be selected. That's just my thought.
The spearhead of the attack. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Who's that? Is that Kemar
Roach? Most experienced.
Oh, yeah. Right. But say that. Say that. There's a big difference between the two. Spearheaded attack. When you talk about spearhead, you talk about Andy Roberts and Malcolm Marshall and these guys that got wickets, man.
Yeah, he's the leader of the attack. Oh. So he wrote us close to 300 wickets, but he's still the leader of the attack.
But that's true. That's true. But I mean, in the last 15, 20 test matches, really, I mean, you know, he's been just thereabouts. But I want to thank you, Jerome. We'll certainly interact with you sometime in the near future. Enjoy the rest of your night in Jamaica, the land of wood and water.
No problem. All right. In Barbados.
All right, good. Let's go to Philo Wallace. Philo, your assessment of the first test and the question I got for my good friend Philo, would you make any changes going into the second? Philo.
Andrew, thank you very much. You asked good questions. Test match, Andrew, I was very disappointed in the surface of Trinidad. I was told that the surface of which West Indies would try on, which they have done. It was a four-day test match, and we survived 4 days. But I don't think it reflects good on cricket in the West Indies. But you get a surface that is so inconsistent in bounce and slow in nature. It makes for hard work even to score runs. Our bowlers, obviously, Jamal Warrington would have had a good test match, and he would have surprised a lot of people because he actually outbowled Modi. And he had a good game, also with the bat and the ball. So to me, the surface has already dictated how the test match should have ended in a team draw. When you look at it, Andrew, changes for Guyana. We have three attacking bowlers. It's the two spinners and Jaden Seal. Roach and Jason Holder, to me, are just holding. Because they're not going to get the wickets that we expect them to get. They're not going to get a lot of wickets. Roach is coming into the back end of his career. He's 36 years old. He has to work harder for wickets on slower surfaces. And Jason, as we know, is just about above medium and bowls off stump line before really looking, threatening to take the stumps or get batsmen out. So when you go to Ghana, you don't know what type of surface you're going to get. You know, it'd be beautiful to see a Shamar Joseph playing because he brings the extra firepower, which we saw in England with Mark Wood. But again, I listened to John DeGrave. Why should we have three people selecting a side and traveling about the workplace and traveling around first class and blah, blah, blah? By the end of the day, Andrew, those people who were called people who were selecting players off of experience, performances, and other ingredients. I don't know who were selecting this side. There's a lot of talk about who is doing it. Nobody's actually saying anything about it, which is sad. I hope that we can get the DOC on this program shortly. But for Ghana, Andrew, to get Shamar Joseph into that side, they have to look at maybe resting Roach. Because Jason Holder has been banned at number six. They're not going to move it from number six. Because we have a wicketkeeper at number seven who is neither here nor there. He struggles at the bat. He might get a little score, but he struggles at the bat. So Jason is critical in the batting. It's if you're going to play Roach. If you want to play Roach in Guyana, then you're going to... All depends on what surface you're going to get, how effective he will be. But I would like to see the young man play. We keep talking about this young man has the ability, this is what we want, but yet we don't seem to manage properly, Andrew. And it's something that worries me with West Indies selections. I don't know what discussions they have, but we need to get people that will bring people to cricket. I don't think 15, 25 are going to come to watch Roach bowl in Ghana. 60 people will watch Shamar Joseph bowl in Ghana because they want to see excitement. They want to see cricket. They want to see our cricket rise. And our cricket will have to rise with exciting players. I'm not saying that Roach is not good enough, but when you look at Guyana's surface, I think that you can play Shamar Joseph in Ghana because we want to win.
So, Philo, if you play Shamar, who would you draw?
You have to rest Roach and do, because Jason Hall is number six. You're right. Not going
fair
to
enough. No, number no, six. I agree with that.
You're battling for everything. You're battling for everything. You cannot move Jason Hall. He is number six.
No, I agree with that.
So he has to stay. So if you're a patient manager, the only family you can leave out is Roach. I'm not business with no workload management for Jaden Seale. Jaden Seale is bowling well.
Yes.
And he must continue to play the cricket. After this test match, he's going to break.
Right.
You cannot pull a man who's the best bowler and tell me you've given him a rest in the two test match series.
Yeah.
I'm glad I heard that they're looking to get three test match series going, because two test matches are not really good for two international sides.
Right.
So you got Jaden Seale. He has to dig deep and come out and go out for 5 days. You can't rest him.
Right.
You cannot rest your best team bowler.
No, I agree.
He's getting the wicket, so who are you going to rest him?
Yeah. George, would you make any changes? George?
Hey, I agree with Philo. Yes, sir. Yes, I would leave out Keba Roach. Just watching Kima, he looks like he's below medium pace, like he can hardly touch a pad. And in Guyana, it's going to be even worse. We need somebody with pace to hurry up these batsmen. And the biggest mistake we made was when we went to England without OJ Shields. Is he injured? We needed to have that extra pace in our pocket that we can always pull him out in case somebody gets injured or if we're resting someone. But we have no one else there in the squad who can bowl up to 90 miles an hour apart from Shamar Joseph. So that's why we made the mistake. That's why I said we made a mistake not picking OJ Shields. I've been calling for OJ Shields since Basil told me about OJ Shields. I had a good chance to watch this guy about three or four matches, and I was very impressed. This guy was bowling the quickest of all of our bowlers in the region. And that's what we needed. And I was just wondering if he was injured. I sent a message to the former chairman of the selector mentioning what I saw in OJ Shields. I thought that he would even pull him in the setup, you know, to be around the guys in case anything happens. But no one listened. And that's why we're having this problem right now. We need pace. And now if we play two spinners who are the same type of spinners, what's that going to do for us? We have to either play an off spinner along with one of the leg spinners. I don't know who you're going to leave out. It's hard to leave Warrican out because he bowled well, got wickets, and got some runs. So Moti may be unfortunate.
Ooh.
I would pick an off spinner to play in Moti's place. That's me. I like Moti, but I didn't like what I was seeing in the last test and when he was in England either. He doesn't look like if he has the confidence.
So George, I got my pen and paper. You're leaving up Moti. Is that what you're saying? Or are you leaving up Kemar Roach? Tell us. What are you doing?
Both.
Ooh.
I would pick an off spinner who, if we have this guy from Trinidad, Brian Charles,
yes,
as the off spinner.
You play him.
Mm-hmm. And you leave out Kemar Roach and you bring in Shamar Joseph.
Ooh.
I'm sorry. You know, if we had other people, a better batting lineup, we would have gotten rid of Holder too. Because Holder has been my favorite cricketer. But Holder is bowling about, I'm telling you, I can come out of retirement and bowl faster than Holder. Holder is bowling just below medium pace. He can't touch a pad. And he's just running up there, no body into his action. I don't know what he's doing.
Oh.
He's spinning.
So
he's been fortunate that he's a good batter. That's
okay.
Why he's in the side.
Oh.
I would have left him out too.
Oh, really? All right. Basil, before we go to Dr. Ford, Kaiso, we're going to come to you now for your assessment of the first test and if you're going to make any changes in South Africa. Basil, would you make any changes to the West Indies side?
I'm in agreement with what Philo said in terms of Roach sitting out, because I was very disappointed that Joseph didn't play in the first test, because I use the analogy of what England is doing currently with Bashir. England see this guy has specific skill sets, what they're looking for in a spinner, right? And they're going to make sure, because they're looking ahead. They're looking because they got to go to Australia for the Ashes. So they're going to make sure they give him all the opportunity in test match settings to develop his skills, and when he run into the Aussies, he would be battle hardened, right? Joseph is in a similar situation. Shamar Joseph has little first class cricket behind his name, and so he needs to play more test cricket. We saw some of those growing pains in England, and he has to go through that process to become the bowler. And if we're talking of building a team that can travel and win test matches on any surface, you got to build your fast bowling unit. So to be playing two military medium paces in Holder and Roach, and I used to make a joke, the former South African pace bowler, Ishmael, I loved Ishmael. Ishmael bowled as fast as both of them. And to have two guys like that bowling like that on a slow surface, it don't even make for entertaining to watch. You know, I want to see a guy that can hurry up guys as my dad used to always tell me, 90 is 90 regardless of the surface. Because you saw Mr. Wood in England, none of those surfaces was no fast surface, but Mr. Wood had our batters hopping and skipping.
Yep.
90 is 90.
I see. Dr. Ford, before we go to Kaiso, would you make any changes to the team for the second test, Doc?
Well, I would first say that the limiting factor for the West Indies is Jason at number 6. It makes the tail too long. I admit that to box that out, ideally, a guy that isn't there, Chase, would be the best person to be at number 6 so that he can bowl off spin and be complemented with a left arm spinner. But Chase isn't in the side. I would also reflect on Vernon Philander and Anderson, who bowled at a medium pace. But, you know, bowling at medium pace has to do with doing stuff with the ball. And I do agree that both Jason is economical and moves the ball away. He's batting at number 6, and I wanted to push him to number 7. I look at Joseph, and I saw how well he did in Australia. But I must admit that being with the T20 team, which I didn't support, I think it's made him lose his length. In England, he was bowling at 80. Plus, he wasn't a 90-mile-an-hour bowler. He was in Australia. He got cramped twice a day, went off the field.
But couldn't that be a lack of cricket, though, Doc? Couldn't that be a lack of cricket? Couldn't there be a lack of cricket because of that?
I mean, that's lack of fitness. That's lack of fitness. That's not lack of cricket. So there's something that needs to be done with him. My thing is, Moti is going back home. He didn't bowl well in that last test, but I was impressed with what little he bowled in England. He was underbowled by the captain in England. I can't take him home and not bowl him. He knows it better than Warwick can. I have to leave them. I believe that succession plan is important. I know that Roach could play for another 2 years, but Anderson had to end at some time. But for this match, in terms of trying to win and trying to solve a problem with Jason being at number 6 when he should be at number 7, I would go with a controversial decision to play Graves so that I would get more batting. And I think Graves moves the ball both ways. And I was impressed by what he did with the ball in Australia, that he was able to move the ball. He looked more threatening even than Jason to me, to be honest, at that pace. And I think that the team with Jason at 6 just isn't a test team. It's just too vulnerable, and that would be a change.
Okay, all right.
I know I haven't bowled the ball, and I haven't driven the ball at Kensington, but still I feel my opinions count.
Oh, my goodness. He's throwing bouncers.
He is indeed. Okay, so...
Doc made some good calls there. And,
yeah, he did.
I like that brave call.
Well, I'm looking forward to the response. 441790. Let me come to Kaiso now. I thought that your side was a little timid in that declaration. Did you need 300 runs? Talk to me about that. And do you think they're going to make any changes? Kaiso?
The tricky part was the pitch. The problem with a featureless and lifeless pitch is that as much as it inhibits stroke play, it also inhibits incisive bowling, which is why Keshav Maharaj was such an important factor for South Africa. I've just checked the scoring rates now. South Africa did try to score rather quickly especially the second innings. But I think the pace of scoring in the first innings was rather problematic. But I think South Africa does face a similar problem in terms of selection. Now, do they sacrifice the control and the batting option of a Vian Mulder to include the pace and hostility of an Andre Berger? Because, and I think as rightly, has been rightly shared on this platform, that based here, as they say, in the subcontinent. But also based here, when you've got the necessary control to make that pace work, even though pace does take the wicket out of the equation. But also, I think on these kinds of surfaces, when you look at these the teams where they are now, they are quite untrusting and unsure. I'm not sure-footed of their betting, which is why they require betting insurance in the form of all-rounders, that being Vian Mulder and Jason Holder. I would think that the West Indies still do need the services of a Jason Holder. I do agree with George in that in as much as Jason is no longer as young as he used to be, I think he could bowl a good five to seven Ks faster, just putting a bit of body behind the ball. I think now, I think he's at a stage where he won't get any faster or any slow, as any fit as a human, as an athlete. But I think though that pace, because if you look at how effective was a Jimmy Anderson, yes, as the older he got, he did lose his pace a fair bit, but he had a bit of sharp pace that made his swing and seam bowling rather effective. You do get spells where Jason Holder is very effective for the West Indies, but you also feel at times that he does require assistance from the wickets. I look at Akima Roach and I'd say it would be a grave mistake to drop him. You realize that, I think
a grave mistake to drop
face out,
and that is based on what?
Yes. Again, there's always the issue of is Kemar Roach fast enough? He bowled with an element of control that on that particular surface was very admirable. Again, I see things. I'm a big Kemar Roach fan first and foremost, but I also should say that you look at the pitches. You also need to judge, especially pacemen, because if you look at Lungi Ngidi for South Africa, for example, was only utilized 11 overs. He's a similar-ish bowler to a Kemar Roach, but you also need to give pace bowlers a bit of grace on a pitch that offers them nothing. I do agree with the assertion that Shamar Joseph probably needs to play pace on, especially if Providence is low and slow. Pace will be the different factor, which is why South Africa themselves face a selection conundrum, whether they now actually play with Vian Mulder, which then thins out the batting, but also Nandre Berger left arm fast, then gives a very different point of attack. Selection is a very tricky. It's a very tricky equation.
Right.
I would say also though, to a guy like Kemar needs to be phased out properly, and I think Philo, and I think you guys may agree with me that the West Indies in the past has not always phased out its greats. I think at some point, when a player reaches a particular stage, yes, at 36, we do understand that Kemar Roach is closer to the end of his career than his start. But there are particular points in a career where he won't be a James Anderson, where he'll play till 42. The West Indies and South Africa, for that matter, don't play that much Test cricket to warrant someone getting an extended stay. But I think conversations with regarding to how they phase out to Kemar Roach need to be sensitive, because you don't want the player being phased out in the same way as Shivleni Chanderpaul is phased out.
All right.
That. The surfaces that they're playing on is going to make it harder for Roach to get wickets at the rate that we will expect him to get wickets. Trinidad was docile. Okay, we don't know what we're going to get in Ghana. Ghana is normally slow and low. If we're looking to win this Test series, which we should be looking, we are ninth in the ICC Test Championship. Roach is going to take longer to get wickets, which is going to cause problems. I'm not saying Roach is over. Roach has something to contribute to, since I believe he can play another year or so.
Right.
But I think that when we're looking at winning Test match region, Roach is no longer. I know he has a good home record, but his potency is not as potent as before because he has to work longer. Yes. And if you have a young fast bowler, let the man loose. Or not. We want to beat South Africa.
Let the man loose
in his home country. That's why. Let them play.
Yeah, I agree.
My next question would be then, Philo, who then provides the control for the other edge? So you'd be looking at Jason Holder to provide the control. while then Jaden Sales and Shamar Joseph are the ones who then provide the pace and the hostility.
Yeah. But we have two spinners who are taking wickets. You have Jaden Sales who's still taking wickets. Jason Holder who's holding. And you have Shamar Joseph adding the extra firepower.
I agree with that.
What is so hard to understand about that?
I agree. I agree totally. There's several calls backed up.
Warwick on to hold to play the holding role as a spinner too.
Right.
So you could have your pace holding on one side and the spinner or holder holding on the other side.
Heading to 7:30. Let's take a couple of calls. Hello, welcome, Mr. and guest. Hello. Okay, let's take another call. Hello, welcome. 441790.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night to you, Mr. Mason.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Mm.
Good night to you and your guests.
Good night to you, sir.
And the VOB listeners.
Mm.
Mr. Mason, I don't want you to treat me the same way, treat circumstances about when you're sure, but I must say something tonight.
Mm.
And you better listen. Now, on Sunday, we had two semifinals in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Before the first test, we had a trial with some young West Indians going up against South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow it, the semi-young lady, Miss Dutton, is back in international cricket,
mm-hmm.
in which that means you know she'll be back in the West Indies team to help Matthews.
Mm. Hopefully.
No, you know she'll be back in the team.
Mm.
What I'm saying to your program, being the only cricket program in Barbados.
Yes.
I hope you know that.
Mm.
But to me, it's the program getting like a business program.
Mm.
You don't hear sufficient cricket. You believe that we should get at least 10 or 15 minutes of that those two semifinals on Sunday on this program?
But
do you believe that we should have an idea of who performed for that team against South Africa in the warm-up?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who performed?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who performed in that game?
Yeah, but I'm not sure I quite understand the point you're making.
What I am saying, Mr. Mason...
We are currently dealing with a test match. Listen, sir.
Well, let me move on.
Just stay with me. Now, a big story broke with Johnny Grave, who
A big story for who?
Well,
he was there for about 7 years.
Yes.
And you move on. I'm not saying that you shouldn't give him some time because you know that he's the only pro, but not an hour.
Okay.
In a program by the hour and three quarters.
Well, he wasn't on for an hour, but I mean, we had to go back. I mean, he said a lot of things too.
All I'm saying,
Not only that too, sir. We have a situation where we're now doing an assessment of the test match that went by, and we're asking the question: would you make any changes? What's wrong with that?
This is what I would say. I'm annoyed. The program.
Why?
Because I believe we got to discuss more cricket instead of business. It's not a political program. It's a cricket program.
Okay.
I believe Sunday two games should have at least have 10 or 15 minutes of this program.
Mm.
That's all. Right. I ain't really following this test series.
Okay.
Because I don't understand what's going on. Mm. And when I understand, I'm going to get too involved.
I see.
You understand? Mm. But I would like you to give Barbadian cricket a little time in this program.
All right.
Just a little 15 minutes. Cricket that playing here. You have a good night.
Okay. You heard every Saturday? The BCF. In fact, VOB brings the program. Thanks. Hello, welcome. Missing the guest. Missing the guest. Hello, welcome.
Hi. Hello, good night, Mr. Mason. How are you?
Good evening to you, sir. Would you make any changes?
Well, I would say, Mr. Mason, if you can drop Roach, you got to draw Holder.
Oh.
If you can drop Kimar Roach, you got to draw Holder. He threw the ball the same thing, medium pace.
Mm.
So what he says, you can keep two.
Mm. Right? So, hold on, call us. Stay with me. So if you drop Roach... And you drop Holder, who would you play?
You say you got feeling, the other boy, Kimar Joseph. You said one player.
Shamar Joseph, yes.
You said one player.
Yeah, but that's only one coming in. Who else would come in?
So if you want player, you got me two. You got me two youngest and fastest boys. You have.
But remember, Seals is already in the team.
Seals in the team. Who had the fast Mickey Mar Joseph?
No, Shamar Joseph.
You got Mickey Mar Joseph as somebody else. Listen, okay. Milton, every week we can't be saying all the time.
Right.
We just, I said last time. F gonna finish the rush. Why you gonna run with him? It's very bad. Hold up here for over 3 years, and he's still in the team.
Right.
It's a problem. I feel the selectors got to get together and realize that this here is not, there's not a friendly nothing. There's a business. We look at the win matches, not lose matches. You understand?
Yeah.
So any selectors can't get it right.
Right.
You got to get real selectors.
The head coach, right? The head coach and scouts now, sir. Get it? You got to get it right too.
Huh?
You got
no selectors.
They're no selectors. Thanks for your contribution. Yes. Let's try and take some more calls. We can. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Hello, good night to you.
Good night to you. How are you?
You and family. I'm pretty good. Now, my thing is not about the team.
Yes.
Now, what I wanted on. Now, you just did a strategic plan 24-27. And you want to bring now a new CEO. What is his input going to be? How minister this strategic plan. He has no say. It don't make sense to me. Something is wrong.
Yes.
You can't tell me that you now do a strategic plan for 3 years.
Yes.
Now the CEO is leaving. The man has to come in now and dance to whoever tune. What input is he, what stamp is he going to put on the cricket? How is he going to do it? Because the plan is till 2027.
That's a good point.
How are we going to operate?
But these things happen in West Indies cricket, Carlos. There's nothing strange about that.
But that's why we are where we are.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you.
All right, have a good night.
Thank you. Let's take another call before we go back to the panel. What time is it now? 7:37. We're going until 8, or is it 8:30 a.m., Ken?
Yeah, good night.
1 o'clock. 1 o'clock.
All right. Who's the gentleman on the line there? You know the gentleman.
Yeah, good night.
Is that the poet?
Yeah. Yes, Andrew.
Yes.
You all should know that West Indies is not going to prepare any fast pitches we are playing South Africa.
Oh, really?
You cannot play a bowling over 90, that is a joke. I think you all know that is a joke. We are not dying by the pitch, so dead. And with, I'm sorry, I like to hear Mr. Wallace, but he's talking about the wicketkeeper batsman. Jesse Horner is the same thing too. Jesse Horner was putting up the team too. He's not used to the team. He can't, he ain't bowling, he ain't batting. Well, I mean, time it all around the Jesse Horner. They're not that five wicket hole, not making a run.
I think he's putting up the team. I think against South Africa, he played an important
role.
No, I'm concerned about Jason's bowling.
He do not bowl like that, but. We are not going to play any fast pitches against South Africa. That is the problem. And I think you all know that.
All right, okay.
But we can't play a ball in over 90.
Okay. All right, thanks for your contribution. You can send some WhatsApp messages. We got another call coming in. Team for Ghana from a WhatsApp contribution. Brathwaite, Sozano, Hodge. Hold on a minute, sir. Atanase, Louis, De Silva, Shamar, Springer. Moti, Shamar Joseph, Jaden Seals, and Jerma Louis. That's an interesting sight. Let's go back and take a call. Hello, welcome, Mason and guests.
Yeah, good evening, Christy. I'm calling from Dominica.
Oh!
Yeah, I'll make two changes.
How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. I've been pretty busy traveling all over the place.
Right.
Okay, so I'll make two changes. I'll rest Roach and Moti, and I'll bring in Shamar Joseph and Graves.
Oh, So let me get this right. So you're bringing in Shamar Joseph for Roach, and you're bringing in Graves. Okay. So why would you do that, caller? Tell me why would you do that? What's your thinking?
Yeah, I would do that because Roach is not showing his form. He's actually equal with Holder. The reason I'm leaving Holder on is because Holder is a bat. He can bat and help the bat, strengthen the batting. But Roach is really going mediocre in his bowling. And then Moti got 0 for 100 and something. And Moti seemed to be tired. I'll rest Moti, although he's playing at home in Guyana. Warrican showed some good form, so I'll have to play Warrican. But I would give Shamar Joseph an opportunity I find he was denied. He should have played the first test in any case. So Sharma Joseph would play, and I would bring in Graves, who is strengthening the batting and can also bowl in Guyana.
Interesting. Just before you go, Mr. Dominica, you must be very happy with the performance of Hodge and Atanase.
Oh, yes. These guys are my targets. They show tremendous pedigree and potential.
Yes.
The only disappointment I had is Atanas should have grafted nicely and got his century.
Got his 100, yes.
And then he appealed for a bad light. Yeah. That's all he should have done.
Oh.
But he was a little aggressive towards that 1992. And come good. But the West Indies, they are really giving him that good opportunity.
Yes.
A good investment for the future. And I'm sure he will come good before long. Thank you very much.
Don't go yet. I understand that there's some land waiting for Mr. Hodge and Mr. Atanase and Dominica. Have you heard anything?
Well, I heard there's something good coming up for them. And I'm certainly, of course, government made them an ambassador a long time ago, a few months ago.
Mm.
And certainly more that we have gotten Tia Lafa with the gold medal. She's coming down soon to get her accolade. Mm. And I'm sure Kevin Hodge and Atanas, the Prime Minister, have been speaking highly of both of them.
Right.
I'm sure they will get their accolade and their job deserved soon.
When is your gold medalist coming home? Do you know?
I see she's planning to come sometime about maybe the 29th of August, early September.
Mm.
I think she's going to do triple jump in Poland in the next couple of weeks.
Mm.
And then I think she will come to Dominica between 29th of August, I think, and the 15th of September. That has to be confirmed.
What part of Dominica is she from?
She's from a little village called Maho. That's where her
Maho.
Outside of driving past Kent Hill.
I know
Maho.
Getting
to Maho in the west of there.
Mm.
That's where all her relatives came from. But she migrated to the United States very young, at 9 or 11 years.
Right.
But she has never forgotten Dominica.
No.
And this young lass, she has tremendous pedigree and potential. And she has given us the first gold medal or the sixth medal in the Olympic Games. And I think that is something, a very big signal honor that should be highlighted.
Final question to you. Is Lafon a big name in Dominica?
Say again, please, Mr.
Lafon. Is Lafon a popular surname in Dominica, Lafon?
Oh, yes. Dr. Lafon works in Barbados. I think he's related to her, Dr. Lafon, a medical doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mr. Lafa, who played cricket for Dominica and the Windward Islands, he passed the other day. And Lafa is a very popular surname. And it came from a French sort of, it originated from the French. But yeah, we have quite a few Lafas in Dominica.
Right.
And certainly, you know, she is really made Dominica proud.
All right. Thanks for calling and enjoy the rest of your night all the way in Dominica.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miss. I'm listening.
All right. Let's pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to go back to the panel and certainly get some reaction in relation to the West Indies team and prospects for the second test, which starts on Thursday. Mason and Guest, brought in association with the good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASFE White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, 441790. Interesting comments, fellow Wallace, coming from the captain of the West Indies side. He's saying, look, we could have won this test match. You heard that.
Yeah, but he's the captain. He has to say positive things. He too is under a cloud, Andrew.
Yes. What's he doing wrong?
I saw his record there the other day.
Mm.
I don't think he has the confidence to score. He's been struggling for a very long time. And obviously, when you look at it, Andrew, he's one of the mainstays in the batting. And he's been worked out. You know, he has great powers of concentration. But when you're the captain, every bowler looks to bowl good balls at you. And as you get deeper into your career, you get slower in certain areas. So Craig has not really improved a lot in his batting. He's just continued with this sluggish, dogged kind of way. And he's now being found out. They know which lines are his weaknesses, and they're bowling more of those balls at him. So he too has to try to get some runs. And he would try to dig in Ghana, as we saw in Trinidad and a few innings in England. But obviously, again, you have to question, is the pressure of captaining the side and not winning, is it weighing on Craig Bradford? But he's the opening batter. He has young Louis there. So they have to forge a partnership. And I would like him to compliment Louis and hopefully give us the starts that are required to give us big innings. Also want to congratulate Alec Anton, as I thought he played well in Trinidad on a slow pitch. Gifted this wicket at 92, but he will learn from that, and hopefully he'll come better in Guyana if allowed to, and he's one for the future to really build our innings around. Calvin Hodge continues to show he's not the most talented, but he has that thing called application and intent, and he wants to play for West. He wants to play Test match cricket and do well as a middle order batter. So you have two young cricketers there, along with Casey Carty, who just came in at number three, showed some. A glimpse of character as well, good character in relation to scoring. Hopefully, we can get the totals in Ghana that would help us to push us to beat South Africa. Andrew, I think we need to beat South Africa. We haven't beaten South Africa in a very long time. And I think we need to understand the importance of winning. There's no advertising on our shirts. There's very little advertising on the venues as well. Andrew, you go to Ghana, you only see about 4 or 5 advertising boards around. You might see 25 people and 10 mosquitoes in the stand. Hopefully, you'll see more. So we need to win to bring this respectability back to our cricket. And the gentleman made a very good point. We have a strategic plan up to 2027. We're changing the CEO. So the incoming CEO, what input is he going to have? Is he just going to rubber stamp thing for the West Indies Cricket Board staff and say yes, please? So these are little funny things that are happening in our cricket that can also have the effect on the pitch.
I see. All right. Talking about what's happening in Guyana, we've joined by Akeem Green, the noted journalist. Akeem, I understand the tickets are going to hotcakes there in Guyana. Is that true, Akeem?
Are you saying CPL tickets are going like hotcakes? Because then I think they're all gone by now, probably. I can't comment on like how many tickets have been sold for the test match, but look, I guess across the region, we've seen it in Trinidad. There isn't much interest for West Indies and test cricket in general this part. So from a local standpoint, so I won't be surprised by any means when the matches come. Then it's weekdays as well, Thursday and Friday. A lot of people have work. We don't see a massive crowd at the National Stadium, Providence.
So I just want to get this out the way. So they're not talking about the test match then in Ghana. When you go into the busy streets of Georgetown, people are not talking about the upcoming test match, Akeem?
Not. Well, the diehards will. No, there are going to be people there that rain, sun, or shine are going to go. But the average fan, I don't think there's a keen interest. But if you ask them about CPL, Yamoussoukro Warriors, they're signing up in the sun, in the rain, to get those tickets. But in terms of if you go a bit east towards where the cricket board office is, you hardly see any lines out there. I think it's just the reality of where cricket is in the region. You know, fans are not going to probably go and spend an entire day to watch test cricket. But that is just the reality, Andrew. I assume it was the same in the other territories in the Caribbean for test cricket. But the T20 lines are quite long. I'm sure you've seen the videos.
Yes, I've seen the videos.
Around blocks and stuff like that. But you don't have that. We don't have that lining up for, test cricket.
Are you looking forward to Shamar Joseph playing his first test match in his in Guyana?
Will he play though? Would he play? I think that's a tough one unless you rest Roach or Seals. And I can't see West Indies not going into the test with two front line spinners. It's Guyana. And it's been a while since we hosted a test cricket, a lot of one-day cricket. The weather has improved a lot, but for some strange reason, of recent, the rain has come back. And so I don't know. I think in Guyana, even though the wickets have improved over the last couple of years, Andrew, I think you need two frontline spinners.
Mm.
And then Jason Hole adds that Barnes City attack. So I think from a stability standpoint, and to be fair, it could be difficult for Shamar to break into the playing 11 unless you drop either Roach or Seals. I can't see Roach, Seals, and Shamar, and two spinners as well playing come Thursday. I think that's a tough one to swallow.
What would Akeem Green do if you were a scout or a head selector, well, head coach, really? What changes would you make for the second test?
I think any change would have to come bowling-wise.
Mm.
Look, it is food for thought, yeah, bowling-wise. I think while Michael Louis hasn't set the world alight, he and Craig Bartwaiters have provided stability at the top of the order.
Mm.
Too early yet to say let's drop Casey Carty. Obviously, we're going to have time for Alec Atenez all the time at this point. You know, he needs to kick on, obviously, and get triple figures. Look, Kavim Hodge obviously offers a bit of left arm spin, and he's been a great stability in the middle order as well. And then, you know, we get into the senior guys
Just hold it there, Akeem. I want to make the point that the captain of the West Indies side, he needs to bowl Hodge some more. Hodge is a decent left arm spinner. Yeah. What is this all about?
And that was what bemused me. That was what bemused me a bit, Andrew, in the first test where you had Hodge, who's more of a decent left-arm spinner. He's taken a lot of first-class wickets, and you picked three left-arm spinners, and then you had Brian Charles,
yes,
who to me is a very good off-spinner, and he was at home. And I thought, in test cricket, I know matchup is a big thing in white ball cricket, but in test cricket, an off spinner is always a lethal weapon. He beats the inside edge of the right hand as well.
Yes.
And so I felt that they could have gone. If you're going to go with Moti, obviously he has to. He's a front line spinner. Yes, he didn't have a good match in Trinidad. But still, why would you pick three, in essence, three left arm spinners?
Didn't make sense, you know, at all. Didn't make sense.
In playing 11.
Mm. I think the captain has forgotten that Hodge can bowl. I think the captain has forgotten that Hodge can bowl.
Yeah, that's totally true. You know, Hodge, I think he was about 3, 4, 5 years. I know he's more than a decent.
Oh, yes.
In Australia, he bowled. He got some success there. So, you know, it's strange that, you know, Hodge isn't bowling as much as he should.
Right.
And then you also go and pick two other left-arm spinners to complement that in itself. So, like, yeah, going back to the playing 11, I would love to see Shamar play. But who do I drop, Kemar Roach or Jaden Seals? That's a tough one.
Well, you can't drop Jaden Seals. You may rest him. I mean, I don't think his name will come into the equation in terms of dropping. If anything, you would rest him. You agree with that? You agree with that? The rest of
it's fair enough, but how much test cricket does West Indies play after this?
I suppose, yeah, I agree.
Jaden Seals isn't part
right
of, yeah, he isn't part of the T20 setup, which comes up after this, and then there's the CPL.
Right.
So the West Indies doesn't play again until what, Bangladesh going to be touring sometime
in December,
late in the year. The foot in resting, where does it lie, you know?
I agree.
He's been off for a long time with injury. I personally won't rest him, and he's been our best bowler, for fast bowler, I would say, in the two series thus far, in England and thus far in South Africa.
Yes. Gentlemen, let's go around the table now. Let's start with you, Basil. Second test match, we're looking at the whole question of possible changes. Do you think the West Indies can win the series, Basil? Can you tell me?
Yeah, I think the West Indies have a good chance to win because of the nature of the pitch. It evens out the situation. And then on the other hand, South Africa does not have a very strong batting lineup. And thirdly, this and actually the top six, and then they have the wicketkeeper, Verena, who is a very useful batsman. You know, so I think South Africa may go with Burger in this next test match and leave Mulder out because they want a little more potency in the bowling attack, because they had to lean on Rabada too much. You know, Amborga would have been even more of a compliment because he bowls at high pace. Actually, he's bowling quicker now than Rabada at this point in his career. Mm. You know, Borgo and the left hand too is and Borgo did a good job against us in South Africa on debut. But I think you know, the surface evens it out that if our batters do the job,
right,
the key things, and our bowlers can be consistent, I think we have a chance to win the game.
All right, let's go to, we got, what, gentlemen, 3 minutes left in the show. Dr. Ford, do you think that the West Indies can win this test match? Talk to me.
Well, it's been almost 30 years that we haven't been able to win a season. So it is unlikely statistically. Our first championship and in these seedings doesn't suggest it can happen. But, you know, cricket is a funny game, as people say, so it can happen. My question is, how many ducks has the captain made in the second innings? Because I feel like it's Groundhog Day. It is not normal, but I would say if we're to win, he can't make a duck in the second inning. For sure.
He has the worst record as an opener in second inning.
Yo, terrible. George?
Very bad record in second. Very bad indeed.
George?
And that is a concern to Craig. I know you'll be thinking about that.
George?
Well, of course West Indies can win the match. Yes, of course West Indies can win the test match if they play proper cricket, play with common sense, stop gifting their wickets away. I'm tired of seeing our batsmen just gifting their wickets away. They need some batting stamina. Mm. They need to stand up there and get runs, be more positive and stop being so negative. I noticed that our batters are their back foot is always on the left, on the leg stump or outside leg stump. So if we put good innings together and bowl straight consistently, we can win this test match.
All right. Kaizo, you think South Africa can win the test match? And of course, the series. Kaizo?
It's going to be tricky. I think a lot hinges on the pitch that's being played in Providence, because I think the pitch will have a very big say in how the team will look. The call for Berg over Mulder is an interesting one. Remember that South Africa has two wicketkeepers. Ryan Rickelton and Kyle Varane. So there's also that toss-up that may need to be made from that particular selection to balance out the team.
All right, let's the final word with Philo.
Yes, Andrew, I believe that West Indies can win this test match and win the series. I think that once they can put a good game in, they've already done 4 days of training. They know what they can do. They pushed the South African bowlers. They tested the South African batters. And I think that once we can play a complete test match for 5 days, I believe we can win this series and congratulate the boys when they win it.
Wonderful. Thanks, gentlemen, for coming on the show. Always a pleasure. Thanks to you, George Ferris. Good that you didn't get into any war with Dr. Ford tonight. It's always
that's
good when that happens.
That's my buddy.
That's your buddy. All right. Someone said you owe an apology. Thanks as well to Basil Jr., Philo Wallace as well. Kaizo, I know it's way past your bedtime. Akeem Green, good to have you on the show. Let's hope that the weather is good in Guyana. I'm going off to Guyana tomorrow, actually. I haven't been there for a long time to do some commentaries, and we're hoping that we can get some commentaries in Barbados. It's now coming up to 8 o'clock. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a brighter tomorrow. It's good night.